This is Dorothy King interviewing Shirley Driver at Halsey Manor on the 6th of February 2015. Shirley, mm-hmm. I have your name. Could I have your address, please?
My address? Yes. Number 8, mm-hmm. 4 Acres, spelt F-O-U-R-A-C-R-E-S, Close.
Yeah.
Taunton. T-A-1-3-E-F for Freddie.
Right, thank you. And could I ask your date of birth, please?
That's very rude by the time you get to my age. The 11th of the 9th, 1935.
I was guessing at 1940, so there you are.
Oh, really? Well, give me 5 years.
Where were you born?
When? Where? Oh, where? Sorry, Where was I born? Oh, yes, I was born in Hackney in London, within the sound of Bow Bells.
That's absolutely lovely. Did you grow up in Hackney?
No. Well, a little bit. we moved when my brother was a year old, so I was 3.
Oh, right.
We moved to South East London then. That's where I was brought up most of the time, but having been born in 1935, of course the war came, didn't it, in 1939. So we certainly lived in South East London until almost the end of the Blitz in the First World War, when we went down to my grandmother, aunt and uncle, who lived in Godalming in Surrey, the connection there. Mm-hmm. But I certainly remember lots of being in and out of an Anderson air raid shelter and, and being told about a nasty thunderstorm that occurred in the night, and that's why the houses down the road were no longer there. So I grew up being quite frightened of lightning, but, but bombs were all right. Do you
remember much about the Anderson shelter being in there?
Oh yes. I've only got to smell something musty, and that puts me in mind exactly. There were my mother, father, my brother, and I, and there were two bunks one side and two bunks the other side, and a little pathway down the middle, which my dad built all sorts of duck boards for, and we had sort of extra carpets over the door as well as the door, so that it blotted out dust and stuff, and we were luckier than most, because our Anderson shelter was reasonably dry, because nearby in our garden we had a great big old oak tree, or in a couple of gardens away, and that drained the land quite well, we used to think, yes. But beds and bunk beds made out of sort of metal strips and wood. And, of course, it was all wool. There were no synthetics in those days, were there? So lots of woolen blankets and eiderdowns and things and a potty.
How long did you have to stay down in the shelter?
When the Blitz was really bad, we would stay down overnight anyway. My father worked in Fleet Street, and he used to come backwards and forwards on the train. Mm-hmm. And mother used to leave his evening meal, his main meal for the day, his evening meal, on warmth. Mm-hmm. And as he came through the house, he would hang up his bowler hat or put his bowler hat on top of the piano, mm-hmm. and pick up his dinner and come through the house, you know. And and then next morning, when it was much quieter anyway, I mean, he'd go off on the train again to work. But there were times when the bowler hat got flattened by the ceilings coming down and things like that.
In your house?
Oh, yes.
Was your house hit?
No, it was not hit, but there were some pretty big bombs, and that there was lots of vibration and such like, you know. I suppose the ceilings gradually got weakened over time, but it was a jolly time. But yes, we went to my to Godalming in Surrey, but then we came back once it got quieter. But then the next spell was when the flying bombs and rockets and things came across nearer to the end of the war. Mm. And we went down there a bit earlier at that point. We didn't brave it out for so long. My mother insisted that father came with us, because previously he still stayed in London and during the Blitz. But, yes, they were... it was all I knew at that time, so I thought that was sort of fairly normal. The thing that really riled me was that I couldn't start school because the girl next door was older than I was, and she went to school and she did lovely things like cookery and that, and sometimes I was allowed to go with her to go and take her dishes back and things like that, and I just loved the thought of school and wanted to go but couldn't until, well, eventually, while we were down in Godalming, I went.
At what age did you start school then?
It would have been five, but how much delayed it was, I'm not sure. No, it probably was about five or so, because I went one morning and came home lunchtime, as primary school children did in those days, and Auntie and Grandma looked at me in horror and sort of said, oh dear, I'd got spots all over my face by then, I'd got chicken pox. It had come out during that morning, and I was just fed up. Really fed up. I waited so long to start school, and now I've got to be off for 3 weeks or whatever it was. So that's how that was.
Where did you go to school mainly then? Was it in Godalming or London?
The infants department was mostly in Godalming, and then, I was back in London for my seventh birthday, because by then I'd contacted scarlet fever, which, of course, was before the days of antibiotics. Mm. Yeah, we ran through the infectious diseases quite nice and quickly, didn't we, really? Yes. I got scarlet fever, so I had to go to the isolation hospital in Catford and couldn't see parents or anything like that. Hated it, you know, sort of there 3 weeks. Mm. A treat was to have a choose each morning whether you had a blue ribbon or a pink ribbon to tie your hair up with. And when I cried at an injection, I remember them telling me that they would put me in the dustbin if I didn't stop. And I remember at that age thinking, you can't do that. But after that, I wasn't particularly well and found school quite... I think I must have been a bit depressed, a bit under, underwell. But junior school, I remember that more in Godalming as well. That was probably during the Rockets. Yes, it was after the Blitz, it was during the Rockets. And I loved the junior school because I was always good at numbers and arithmetic and things. And we had a Mr. Gibson, who the headmaster, who used to come and teach us on first thing on a Thursday morning, I remember to this day. And he would fire at you mental arithmetic things, and you had to be absolutely answering on the no hesitation at all for the components of 10. If he pointed at you and said 3, you've got to say 7 and all the rest of it. And I often used to win a new pencil, a brand new pencil with a sharp point. So I quite loved that. But it was a very nice environment around there. I enjoyed the country, the country town, and my uncle was there, enjoyed lots of walks and that. He worked as a gardener, so that was quite interesting, but he'd been gassed in the First World War, so he only had one lung, so he made sure he did plenty of walking, and that was interesting and good. When the rest of the family came home, I didn't want to come home because I enjoyed the routine there and I liked the school, and I'd got this best friend, Gillian, whose father happened to be Chinese, actually, but we were great pals and we did all sorts of things, but... Eventually, it was decided that I was homesick, that because I started telling my teacher about things that my brother did, which usually didn't interest me because he was 2 1/4 years younger than I was. But so eventually, I came home and found that I was miles in front of the London children because, you know, some of them hadn't been so fortunate. Mm. But I had some really good schooling in Surrey, so that was great.
Did you develop an interest in music at that stage when you were a child?
Not particularly. No, I mean my overwhelming interest. I mean, I loved music, but dance was my folk thing.
At that stage.
I mean, at the London Primary School, we used to do a little bit of dancing, but. I don't remember that with any particular joy. It was something I quite liked. I liked physical things anyway. But no, that it didn't develop from there. Although I suppose I'd always got an appreciation of sort of better music, but that was from parents, I suppose, really.
They were musical?
They enjoyed a wide variety of things, but I don't remember being particularly good at all the popular things, like film stars, and I think they were a bit sort of classical or whatever. Not educated to university level or anything like that. I mean, that was quite rare in our level of society at that time. So, but yes, appreciated all sorts of things. But art, I suppose, was particularly. My father was sort of quite an amateur artist, and he always taught me, from a very young age to mix colours and things like that. So, art was a particular thing, but we weren't sure to be introduced to things at home. But no, folk, my introduction to folk was really that. So, I belonged, when I left school, I joined a cycling club. My father had always been a keen cyclist, and they were all very keen on the countryside and this. So I joined, and it was a local Y Youth Hostel Association group, is sort of a, I had a little bit of a gap, I suppose, but about 17 or 18 or whatever. And that went from strength to strength, and it was sort of, I mean, I went to an all-girls grammar school, so it was nice to have a mixed club, and
to meet boys.
Oh, that's right. Yes. Otherwise, it was limited to the scouts and the church, I think. Well, apart from those up and down the road, but didn't count those. what was I saying?
The cycling
club. That's right. Yeah. Yes, and we used to meet on a Wednesday in an old school hall, and we needed a social activity on a Wednesday, either a talk from somebody or various things. And there were a couple who used to come along who were a bit older than us, but they were very keen and experienced in international folk dance, and they'd bring recorded music. So once a month we used to, Ron and Phil used to come along, and we used to have a dance and gradually learn. So we were sort of quite keen on that, and by then the other friends that I'd made within the group, they were quite keen as well. I mean, the girls more than the boys, but on the other hand, we got some of them in eventually. And then the YHA at that time always used to have an international rally in Europe or somewhere. And typical of the English, all the Israeli people, the Dutch people, the German people, Austrian, all different sorts of would have something to contribute, either songs or dance or whatever. And we were a bit of a, English wouldn't do anything. So the National Secretary suddenly had this idea that our YHA group did dancing anyway once a month. So how about us being the nucleus to form a folk dance group with a view to getting trained up and being something, a credit to England when the next international rally came up. So that was what happened. We managed to meet in central London at the youth hostel in Earl's Court. Didn't annoy the neighbours too much at first, but and so that was great. We met lots of other people, and my sort of particular girlfriends, sort of Audrey, Ruth, and Muriel, and Valerie, and that we'd meet on a Friday after work. We'd go into what was then the Little Lion's Corner House and have a tea, and then we'd go on to Earl's Court. All things of an era, you see, I'm afraid. I'm a bit ancient. And and then we'd go on to the dancing group, which was really nice because we had a lovely old musician called Harry Decoe who played melodeon. And he would always come and play for us wherever we went. And it very soon developed up into going youth hostelling at weekends, as well as our local group. My parents then didn't see much of me, really. But
You were 18, 19
or whatever, you know. We all packed off over to Germany when we went, just before I was 19. So, but we would hire a village hall near the youth hostel or whatever and run a dance for ourselves and anybody else in the youth hostel, anybody locally that wanted to come in. And one of our favourite places was certainly down at Galthurst in Kent, bear in mind that we were all sort of home counties. And that was great fun. But in addition to that, of course, we had to practice for these international rallies. And we felt that since we were doing international dancing at that point, but we got to sort of do something pure English for that. So we got in touch with the English Folk Dance Song Society, and they sent us along this guy called Bob Bowker, who came and trained us in mostly Playford dance, with the lovely tunes, but other dances and that as well. And so we became quite competent and therefore relaxed at it. Some of the fellows joined us as well. And an awful lot sprung from that group. I mean, we danced at the Brussels exhibition in Belgium, and that, I forgot what year that was, but 1950s rather than 1960s, yeah. Mm-hmm. And we danced in Princes Street Gardens when it was in Edinburgh, and Holland and Luxembourg and various places. So that was quite fun, actually. And we sort of developed our costume, which we made ourselves for the most part in those days.
what was the costume like? Do you remember? Oh, yeah.
Well, I mean, it was difficult to think of anything because everybody's, you know, we haven't got a national costume as such. No. I mean, you can locate periods when things were, but we simply wanted something bright, and so we had different. Each person had a different colour skirt. And they were plain circular skirts and swirled around with nice little petticoats and things, weren't they? And a white sort of muslin-y, no, it was a bit crisper than that. But anyway, blouses with three-quarter sleeves and a black waistcoat, black velvet waistcoat. I remember making those. They were horrid because they were nice silk velvet, and they didn't go nicely under a sewing machine. But those and a little black dancing shoes, and the boys simply had, the men, the boys, whatever they were then, had white shirts and grey trousers. Mm-hmm. I think synthetics had come in by then, so they could have creases in them, and they would pack reasonably well. And then later on, we also developed a Morris team for the men, not for the boys, and not for the girls. Mm-hmm. And they had some rather jolly waistcoats for that. So that was our.
So was this a London Morris group?
No, we called it the YHA Folk Dance and Song Group.
Right.
And in actual fact, for it to be folk dance and song, I remember somebody from the FDS came along and taught us. I think they only got to about three different folk songs, like what should we do with the herring's heads? Make muffins and breads of the herring's heads. And then there was Johnny Todd, which was a sort of shanty thing. And God, what was the other one? Fortunately, some of these were on a record by one of the folk groups at that time, so we did cheat a bit. But in actual fact, our dancing went down really rather well. It was rather nice. So we seldom got asked for a song because we'd taken our slot with dancing, which was just as well. But it was a good introduction, and an awful lot of the people who, well, ever so many of the people that were in that group, I'm still in contact with. Those that some have died off.
And it's lovely.
Yes, because we were already sort of centred on central London, and we'd already travelled to go in. And then as we married and had families and moved a bit further out, we were all great friends, so we used to sort of exchange weekends. The kids were like cousins to each other. And we didn't always meet in Earlscourt Youth Hostel because the neighbours eventually sort of didn't particularly want that music every Friday night. And so we looked around, and it's quite hard to find a hall for big enough for dancing within our price range. But in Dalston, Islington, near to where I was working at that time, there was the Metropolitan Almshouses, and they'd got they were along the Bull's Pond Road of the the goons, you know. And they'd got a nice square of grass, and round the square of grass were all these almshouses built, and right at the end there were the wardens, the warden and his wife, their accommodation, and then above it a formal meeting hall which their society used to meet in. But they were willing to rent this to us, and it was really rather nice, because Charlie, the warden, was a Geordie, but it was a very friendly place, and lots of the old people used to look forward to Friday nights, because they used to come up and sit round the chairs to watch our dancing. And as we all, lots of us sort of married off, paired off and married off, you know, they give us a little present. In fact, I've still got this little set of glasses which they gave to us, which it made it more villagey, but within London, you know.
Yeah,
so it was. And they were quite sorry, apparently, when we all sort of seemed to produce children, and at about the same time all go on to form in a family. So it had to come to an end eventually, because by then we were living in Godalming. We got our first house in Godalming, in Surrey, eventually. And other people were in sort of Chesham and Harpenden, and it was too far to travel in, especially with family responsibilities and that. So. But it didn't stop us dancing, because we'd got this background now in dance, and some of them in music as well, playing for dance. And so wherever we moved out to, we all found the same sort of thing, that we'd got a ready-made society. So, I mean, we joined Guildford Folk Dancers, which was, you know, a super group, and other people joined the groups that they were near. And at the similar time, actually, when we were all producing children, Bill Rutter, of course, is very instrumental in Halsey Manor and Sydney Festival, and folk. He was a YJ warden at some point as well during his history, so he was conversant with all this sort of thing. And he had the idea that, okay, because you couldn't take children under five to youth hostels at that time, so we couldn't do youth hosteling anymore, but we loved the countryside and all the rest. So how about camping? And that would be within our price range now that we've got families and wives didn't work that much these days. Mm-hmm. So, so folk camps was developed, whereby you took your own tent, the organisation hired a marquee or a village hall, but marquees were more popular in those days, which was the main expenditure, because marquees are very expensive to hire. And we would arrange to have a farmer's field rather than a permanent campsite, because it made it nice and private, remote enough for us to play lots of music and stuff. And we went to all sorts of interesting locations, and the association still goes on. I mean, there's still a folk camp society alongside Halsey Manor Society. So, so that's how quite a lot of us stayed in contact, and we gradually introduced more and more of our old friends and newer friends within the folk dance groups into folk camps. So we carried on our dancing and music and that for a long time that way. And I mean, I think some of my neighbours think I'm a bit odd, because I'm out a lot of the time, but I still have got friends that, I mean, so Christine and our sweatshop comes from folk camp, right. Thingy,
yeah, yeah.
And so that takes up one day a week, mostly anyway. But for various reasons, we stayed in contact. Well, friendship anyway. I mean, you know, but unfortunately now, sort of some of the closer ones. I mean, sort of Audrey and Briz, one particular couple, who are then introduced to Halsey by the time we moved down here. And Audrey used to have a Scottish dance weekend from her group in Tunbridge, and so they were all introduced here, and then it spread around to a wider catchment area. It was sort of pretty fruitful, actually, and it carries on introducing old friends to Halsey and folk camps even now. In fact, my ex-husband's cousin was one of our group as well. He was one of our folk dance group, the YHA folk dance group. And then he and his family didn't camp. They had posher holidays and didn't particularly like camping, and he still doesn't. But unfortunately, he was widowed sort of 18 months ago. But he'd always played the violin which was great, and he'd always dance, but while his wife Beryl was alive, because there's always a shortage of men in dancing, he would always dance rather than play and be a partner for several people. But now he feels a bit freer and he can concentrate on his violin, and so his mum would be pleased because she was a very nice lady, but she made him practice. He's still got the same violin at the moment that he had from ages back. But I sort of suggested to him that there was the odd violin week and that here, so mm-hmm. how about trying it? So so he did, and now he comes quite frequently here from Buckinghamshire. And I was speaking to him last night, and we're all going up to the Wye Valley week after next. Mm. So he's come in there for the first time with us, but he's done other folk camp things where he stayed bed and breakfast for a short weekend where it's been for music or for something else. It's been almost like a religion, really. In fact, it stopped me having time to go to church. Yes, when I was younger, it was more fun.
Did you have any folk camps around here?
Then? Yes, yeah. Well, we used to have a what we called the Winter Warmer in January, mm-hmm. which was based on here mm. instead of being under canvas or anything like that. But that's sort of divided off a bit now. But in August, they have a family weekend here mm. More recently, so that's sort of on that sort of model. Mm. But having said that, we've also in, I remember it was 1969, that's when my third child was born, my youngest child. We camped at Breen Sands up Burnham right. way, you know, that. Yes. And where else? I mean, it got so popular that during the month of August, which was the time when we really operated, apart from odd weekends and bank holidays, mm-hmm. There were various sites. I mean, there was one in the south, one in the north, one in France, perhaps, or even mm-hmm. Germany or Holland or whatever. So we had quite a selection, actually. I mean, we spent, when the children were a bit older, we spent quite a few summers in France with folk camps and mm-hmm. looked for sites out there and found some really nice places, again, away from public sites and sort of near Pont-Avon, that peninsula down there. I remember once going on holiday down there and purposely looking for campsites, and Barbara Harrison,
yes.
She and I brought out our best possible, in fact it was her last year, brought out our best possible schoolgirl trench and talked the mayor of Nevers into allowing us to have a folk camp mm-hmm. using as a base their village hall. It's a reasonable sized village, and the adjacent sports field for the camping, and we used that for several years, and very happy memories of yes.
When was your first involvement with Hornsey then?
Sorry, yeah, I've left that one out, haven't I?
Yeah.
Oh dear, yes. My first involvement with sorry, can I pause just for a sec?
Yes.
Just to sort of
sec. When was your first involvement with Halsey?
Oh, right, yes. It was before I moved to Somerset from Godalming in 1974, but it was long before then mm. because with Guildford Group, Guildford Folk Dance Group,
yes.
we did a great deal. And in the, I think it was the autumn of the winter of 1966-67, The Guildford Group and Southampton Group were getting together for a weekend away at a place called Horsey Manor in Somerset, long before I ever dreamt that I'd come and live here. And so we came down then. That was husband then and me and my first child, my daughter, who was two plus. Mm-hmm. So sort of That winter of 66-67, and I think Pat Shaw was calling dances. I think I was probably quite busy, actually, with the two-year-old as well. So, but I remember enjoying the dancing. But I do remember Pat Shaw commenting Why did I bring a child? Couldn't leave her behind, but and she wasn't disruptive. So yes. So that was the first time I came and stayed here, and of course we were at a distance and sort of involved with babies and.
Were you camping?
Oh no, we weren't camping at Halsey. No. Halsey was, you know, a proper building.
So you were actually staying in the hall here?
No, in the bedrooms. Oh,
in
sorry.
Bedrooms, yes.
In bedrooms. Yeah. It's before we had the Mews. We simply had this, but it's when Donald and Marjorie Hunt were here and the very early days of the the early days of the society. I mean, it was another of Bill Rutter's things, you know. It was Bill Rutter who'd negotiated for this place and could see the potential for it. Yeah. So we came, and I don't know how many of us there were, probably about 50 or something, because there were more, there were less ensuite, I mean, there weren't the ensuite bedrooms that there are now, and there was more sort of dormitory accommodation, so for families or friends or whatever, you know, it was quite accommodating. And that was a really nice weekend. And then in 1967, we came down again. So that previous one must have been before 1967, because my daughter was born in 64, so it was definitely 66, or perhaps even the end of 65. Mm-hmm. I must look up some old diaries, sorry. Mm-hmm. So in 1967, Guildford Group was coming down again, and we'd got enough people to fill it entirely. Mm-hmm. Donald and Marjorie were still here, I remember, but that was fairly early in the year in 67. And by then I'd got a little son as well as a daughter, and he was born on February the 1st. So we came here when he was pretty young, and I remember actually bathing him in one of the big wash basins upstairs because he'd have got lost in one of the big baths here. And we weren't camping, so I hadn't bought the baby bath and kitchen sink and everything. So I must confess, I can't even remember who was calling or who the band were or anything, but certainly, I mean, the person who used to arrange so many things for Guildford Group was Coral Charles, mm-hmm. who unfortunately died just a couple of years ago. At the same time as another old friend, Alan Colquette, who subsequently came and moved to this area. And he'd been one of the cycling group. Yes, he'd been one of the cycling group, the YHA days. So all these things interlink. Pause a sec. I'll get it together. Yeah, I might be repeating myself a little bit here. But certainly Coral arranged the weekend for Guildford Group in 1967, as she did subsequent many, 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 many weekends and weeks holidays and things like that. Yes, we were great friends, and she was Coral Southern then. That's before she married Ron Charles, and her mum was my first babysitter actually when my first daughter was born. When the dancing started again, she was born in the May, and when the dancing started again in the September, Mrs. Southern said, "Well, bring her in her carry cot, and I can look after her. She can sleep away on the bed in the spare room," which was great for the first year while she was tiny. It didn't interrupt my dancing at all.
A more helpful approach than Pat Shaw the caller.
Definitely. Yes. I mean, I don't think he really meant to be unfriendly or anything like that, but I don't know whether he had a family, or I rather imagine not. But anyway, I mean, Coral used to arrange all sorts of things along with other people.
Did this early introduction of the children to dance encourage them?
I mean, the early introduction, not as early as being tiny enough to be bathed in a wash basin. No. But so in actual fact, that sort of doesn't necessarily link to Halsey Manor, because although I came here in early 60s or mid 60s and then again in 67, we were then into folk camp. And folk camp was our holidays. Mm. And in those days when wives didn't work, we sort of missed my income. Mm. And we couldn't have umpteen holidays a year. And I think Halsey would probably have been quite expensive for... Hence, it's run for so long on retired people or people whose families have already... But the introduction to dance and that was influential with the children, but it was via folk camp.
Mm.
Yes, so perhaps I better not go down that.
No,
that's the wrong avenue, isn't it? Although having said that, actually, this isn't chronologically in order, but my daughter, who is now, she's now 50, but she's got a couple of sons, and... The older one is now 13, the younger one is just turned 7. And they're both very keen on music, especially the older one has been really, really very keen. She's done quite a lot of French music and played hurdy-gurdy when she was expecting him. She was playing hurdy-gurdy. I mean, that doesn't leave much room on the lap, does it? And he was always jigging along to the rhythm of music, even as a tiny, tiny, tiny one. And certainly... We went to folk camp again as three generations, you know, so me as grandma, her as mother, and him as the baby, sort of seamlessly, really. And then met other folk camp people there who were also producing grandchildren or children. So that goes on from one generation. Folk camp seems to go on from one generation to another more seamlessly than perhaps Halsey does. Because I think there's... perhaps a little bit of resource shortage when you've got babies and things, but perhaps not so much now with most mothers having to work. I keep going off at a tangent. You'll have to edit that out, won't you?
I don't edit anything.
Oh, dear. It's certainly been beneficial in my family's experience for the next generation to be interested in folk and that. I'm skipping a generation here going on to the grandchildren, but I think my daughter is very strong on it. And, and as a grandmother, I've certainly been sort of accommodating. I've wanted them to. We've got an opportunity to learn music. I mean, the schools, unfortunately, now with all the cutbacks and things, we had some very good people here. But one of them in particular has sort of come up to retirement anyway, but is still very interested. But they've Somerset has done away with music almost, you know, as far as... Well, schools are becoming academies as well, thickly, and the whole education field seems to be changing in that. So it's very important to have the input of things like Halsey Manor. But, we've got a Somerset Rural Music School, which meets in a secondary school on Saturday mornings. And ever since my older grandson was 5, or just coming up to 5, I've always taken him on a Saturday morning. And he learnt, first of all, with the tots. And then, now he plays piano and clarinet. But independently, because of experiences at folk camp and wider experiences with his mother and all sorts of things. I mean, he loves to play his guitar quite nicely. He's on, of course, the electronic keyboards are very, very useful as well. And I used to find that when, or still do actually, that when he came home from school, as a relaxation, he quite often say to me, because his mother had to work, and so I'd be bringing him home quite often, he would quite often be saying to me, I've thought of a lovely tune today, and he'd get straight home and he'd play it on his keyboard. So, you know, that has been really, really, really nice. And, all sorts of interesting things. They came here recently, their mother and the two little boys, the 13-year-old and he was 6 then, there was a Spanish group here, and that was really enjoyable. I brought them here for the concert, along with their mother. I'd been doing the shop, I think. We went and had fish and chips at Watchet on this recommendation, and that was delightful. Even that was an experience, because we went to the fish and chip shop, bought our fish and chips, and they said, you can eat it in the pub next door. And the pub next door, yes, next to the chippy there, they're very accommodating. Even made a pot of tea and things like that. My daughter and the boys had tea or something. I think they charged them £2 for a whole pot of tea.
I'll remember that next time.
Yes, you know where near the museum and the little chapel over.
Yes, I know.
And as you face it, the pub is to the left, and they were ever so accommodating. It was really delightful. Then we came back here. Yes, we came back here without rumbling tummies, and had the Spaniards concert, which was really delightful, and it was really relaxing. Yvette came. Yes, Yvette was just in front of me. And the boys were ever so keen. And when it came to the end of the formal concert, eventually, although we kept with encores as long as possible, he was jigging away, dancing away. The younger one, which surprised me, actually. Yeah. I mean, he looks like a Morris man in the making. So it was lovely for him to be here as well. I mean, we're sort of a 26-mile round trip, really, from my home to here. So it's not always possible to bring little ones. But, that was certainly sort of a continuing thing, because they're not having that at school, but they do have it on a Saturday morning because both boys go now. So that's good. And, of course, the folk camp, most
continues.
Years they go to folk camp. Mm-hmm. And there people are so accommodating. People like Chris Jewell and that, you know, will lend them an instrument and show an interest. And it's really constructive. I find it so hard to separate Halsey from folk camp because... Well, they all came from Bill's ideas, as it were, and so many of the people in them are common to each other. Mm-hmm. And so, where were we then? Certainly, we, because of work purposes, we needed to leave Godalming in 1974 and move to Somerset. So we settled in Taunton in 1974. And, of course, the most natural thing to do was to come to, not necessarily the nearest, but a folk dance group. Mm-hmm. So at Halsey Manor, there was a Wednesday, alternate Wednesday evenings folk dance group. And we naturally joined that straight away, which and there would be people. There were quite a few people down here that we knew already, and we were really already introduced here, and we were able to bring other people and dance groups to Halsey as well as Guildford Group. That was really good, and it was nearly always live music, except that. Yes, when we very first joined, there was a fiddle player who played for the dancing called Charlie, and I remember people saying, "Well, he won't play waltzes. Charlie won't play waltzes. So if my husband then was doing some calling or something, he won't play waltzes. And also, he used to shut his fiddle case at 10 o'clock because that was late enough. That was the time. You know, you might come from elsewhere. The other thing that happened to me early down here was that I got a phone call when I'd been down here just a little while from Bill Rutter saying, "Don't forget you won't forget the meeting, will you, next week?" And I said, at that time I was on Folk Camps Council, and I said, "No, we haven't got a meeting next week." "Oh," he said, "I forgot," because Bill was a Lauren to himself. "Oh," he said, "I forgot. Perhaps I haven't told you," he said, or let alone ask you, "but perhaps I haven't told you that it would be far more convenient for you to be on Halsey Manor Council rather than the Folk Dance Council, because now that you're so relatively near," I didn't use the word relative, "but now that you're so near, that would be a good idea. So there's a meeting next week." So I sort of negotiated to borrow the only car that we ran at that point, and sort of came. That was in the days of Ruth being the Ruth and Mike being the incumbents here. And but it didn't really work out, because although I had the interest, I hadn't got the I'd got, you know, three children of what, sort of 5, 7, and 9 at that point, who needed collecting from school in the afternoon and all sorts of things, and only one car, so it just wasn't practical. So after a very little while, I'm afraid I had to say no, perhaps later on I will be able to, but not then. But we certainly came along and really enjoyed the Wednesday evening dance session group, because living so near, naturally you wouldn't come and stay here. You'd support it in all sorts of other ways. I mean, certainly for years, always supported the Summer Fete, that was quite fun then. It was sort of far more amateur, it was like a any church fete, village fete or whatever, and we did all sorts of things, perhaps a bit of dancing, certainly sort of tombolas and things like that, but anything else that would raise some funds as well. And I remember spending a long time actually ran a store called Lucky Seven, and this was raffle tickets, cloakroom tickets, raffle tickets, folded up very carefully and put inside straws with numbers. And to win a prize, you had to pull out one with a seven. And I remember that was quite popular. I remember feeling quite proud, actually, in the sort of mid-1970s. So I remember the stall took £36, which I thought was not bad, actually, just for a one-girl effort. But it was popular with kids, and we did all sorts of things like that. So there are many happy memories of those sorts of things going on. And then after we've been here a little while, we did begin to think, well, I don't know, just meeting with the group on a Wednesday, there's not much time in folk dancing. You're either listening to the caller calling through the dance, or the music's striking up and you're actually dancing it. And you can't talk then either, or when the caller's in it. And then the gaps in between dances, between enthusiastic dances, are not very great, you know. And somebody would always be having to do tea, and you'd queue up for tea and things like that. And I remember driving home one night and sort of saying, it wouldn't really matter if we never ever met there again. We wouldn't be missed. And, you know, it doesn't seem to be making... I don't mean to take charge of it or anything like that at all. But it didn't seem to spread to other things. So we thought, well, although all the other groups come to Horsey to have a residential week, we're obviously not going to come, or we weren't going to come and pay to come to Horsey when we're within walking distance, in motoring of it. So we suggested it to the committee, or I think husband was on the committee, or one of us was by then, because we'd formed. It didn't even have a committee to start with. It had come from the village, I think, and it'd been a very nice sort of just very local thing. But more and more people were coming, so we looked around and we found a place down in the New Forest, actually called Avon Tyrrell. It was National Association of Boys Clubs. It was a mixture of double bedrooms on a modern wing and dormitories elsewhere. But it was in a lovely area, and there was plenty of space for dancing. And so we negotiated to have a weekend there with the group. And it was quite popular. It was not too far to drive. And that's it. And we had at least two, perhaps we had more. We had some really nice callers down there, and there were sort of little traditions that started there with some callers. So that was nice, and it did give us far more time to socialise and get to know each other a bit better. And that's really gone on with stops and starts ever since, so that the group can go elsewhere as well as coming here. So that I think it sort of encouraged people to perhaps be more supportive of Horsey, because it's only recently that more people have joined Horsey Manor Society, I think, and with all the plans for the development, we certainly need lots of really purposely committed people.
I've forgotten what his name is. Is it Mike, who's just left as the manager of Horsey?
Oh, no, that was Paul.
Was he quite influential?
In the time that he was here?
Yes.
Yes. I mean, he'd got a background in folk. Mm. One of his very main long-lasting interests had been Blausabella. I've sort of known that band since long before he came here.
Mm.
Perhaps it's a bit disappointing, really, that he's not stayed on longer, because it is absolutely vital and essential that we have younger people. It's not prejudice or anything like that, but it's just like a plant. It's just not healthy, is it?
No.
Unless there's development coming up. And he was certainly getting to grips with that. It's difficult alongside financial stability, and, you know, you can't just keep subsidising very, very much younger people, because they are younger. You've got to think of, you know, other ways. I know there have been some funds and that, but it looked very promising. And for years we've talked about needing extensions and things to make the place more viable. And hopefully the first stage is going to get underway fairly soon, and hopefully the other stages can follow on. I don't think it's going to happen very quickly, not unless we get some colossal great time. So I probably won't see it, he'd got very useful connections. It's such a shame that his family didn't relocate down here and integrate with the area, because previously mostly managers have been residential, not absolutely exclusively, but it's nice to have a resident manager with a residential establishment, even if it's only sort of part-time residential, but full-time. So good luck to the new incumbent. Yes. It's very useful to have a folk background. And now that previously, I always used to feel, because I'm no singer, I always used to feel that it was very much dance. Folk to me was dance and the music and traditions and things. Mm. But now that we've got sort of Yvette and all of you have joined us, of course it's added a song part to it as well. And I mean, the sort of craft bits that get added to it, and the violin making, and there's a whole, as far as our charitable status is concerned, it's sort of becoming far more satisfied, I would have thought, by the input that is coming in. But at the same time, it's got to be, you know, we can't just magic up money. It's got to be financially viable. But that's why it's very important to keep trying to interest people in it all the time. I mean, even if each one of us only introduces one person, well, then that puts a bit more... I mean, not that it's all about putting finance into the coffers, but you've got to be practical, haven't you? Folk camp and Halsey Manor overlapped. Yeah, I'm repeating myself here, with social contact and support. And also with volunteers, because we've had some very good volunteers, particularly carpenters, they sort of stand out, you know, because we've had, you know, I mean, I can think of various people that have done lots of woodwork, so Briz and Ron, and people who are not at a distance, but Bob Hughes, who lives down in Kimmichlory. I mean, he's done no end of handiwork up here over the course of time. And Sheila too. I mean, it encompasses sort of all of us, do a few curtains and things like that. But sometimes, because things change here sort of quite a bit, really, it's very easy to forget volunteers. And it can be quite hurtful to them. And I think that's something that really we need to be mindful of. A couple of our carpenters unfortunately have died, but other people who've been very good handymen and things like that, it's almost as if they're perhaps forgotten, but they're not. No, I find it quite delicate to put that, but it's been a wealth at Halsey Manor to have volunteers, because if you start paying for everything, you don't have money for future development and things like that, and there's a limit to how much the visitors, the punters, the partakers, are willing to pay.
Yes.
And so yeah, and contributing to fundraising is, as volunteers. I mean, this isn't really about folk, but as volunteers, our little sweatshop, which meets up in Netherstowe at Christine's, mm-hmm. where we make things for the shop and then sell from the shop to support the place. But that sort of, in a way, strengthens some of our input, because some of us are not so able at dancing as we used to be.
Mm-hmm.
And I regret that I've never really learnt to play something. I'd really like to be on, have an input to music now that the legs aren't so good.
Are you still dancing?
Barely. But, I mean, I would like to, but I need some treatment. My GP's been a bit economical, I feel, and I've pressed it now. Because the other thing is that the manor's been used for all sorts of things in the past. All sorts of clerks, the shoe people, used to use it for training courses.
Mm-hmm.
CGB, I think, used it a bit. Certainly Somerset County Council, for whom I worked, have used it. Various departments, education, social services. I mean, my own social work team have been up here for the odd training day and that. And they used to really appreciate... really appreciate the situation that Halsey Manor is in geographically. And that, I mean, we're so fortunate here. Mm. And if you have a training day, you let it out for a training day, it's so nice, sort of, after lunch, just to have a half an hour off or something and go and have a good old walk, just up the hill and back, or whatever. And that's been really appreciated. And during that time, you can sort of talk to people about what goes on here and, come and join us at some point. I mean, there's all sorts of people that have introduced. Some stay, some don't. Circumstances change. But my contemporaries sort of tend to be getting a bit older. So, but it is really important to introduce people, and also to, people become widowed or whatever. It's good to be able to maintain that interest. People give up driving or can't drive or don't drive once they're widowed or whatever. And we need to sort of extend friendship to include those people as well, because this place is fairly isolated. Mm. You might be able to get up here on a bus. I don't think you'd get back down on a bus, and you wouldn't particularly want to be using the bus. But also the family generations for the contact that's developed. And certainly the last manager's efforts to encourage more young people is a really, a necessary thing, isn't it?
With your work in the shop and you work in the sweatshop,
mm-hmm.
what kind of things do you make to sell?
Oh, we make all sorts of things. If we get asked for it, I mean, we've got people who will sew or embroider or make cards or from paintings or photography. We have to buy in now. We used to have Linda, who used to very keenly used to make us jam, but because of increasing health and safety stuff and that, she had to retire. But we now buy in jam and honey, and that's always is popular. And we buy in sweatshirts with the logo on it, and that's nice because it spreads Halsey Manor around, and polo shirts and such like. But we make a whole load of domestic things from fabric that people give to us, and so we make sort of we make some specialist things like music stand bags. Mm-hmm. Music stands are dreadful things to carry around, but if you can have just a long bag that it will slip into with one handle over the top, it can be slipped over an arm while you're carrying all sorts of other things. And we've sold an immense number of those, and we're quite known for those. And similarly, microphone stands and various musical sort of stands and things. We make lots of we've got some ladies in Minehead who knit for us from wool that's given, so they make all sorts of nice woolly hats and lots of children's jumpers and things like that, which we've always got a selection of there. But we make whole sort of pot holders and tea cosies why can't I think of these things? We make loads of. we make I know why the mind's blotted out. It's because just recently we've been making metres and metres and metres of gold-coloured bunting all different sorts of things to hang around inside, and we've got some more to go outside. So, yeah, that's that sort of... we must come to the end of that now, because we still make some of the things that we sell lots of.
Yes.
yes. Come and have a look anyway. Come and have a look, because there's just loads of stuff there.
So perhaps we can take a photograph of you with your craft items.
Oh, possibly, yes. Hmm. That's an idea, isn't it? Yes, okay. Mind you, it's quite a job. It's all stored in the cupboard under the stairs. Well, apart from the big boxes of stock, which are right down the far end of the corridor. So one minute we're dashing down the corridor, the next minute we're bent double and nearly can't get out of the cupboard under the stairs. But we were, ages ago, when Paul first came, actually, he did say he'd have to look in to see what we could do to have a proper place for the shop. But that's a low priority, I think. One day we'll get stuck in the cupboard under the stairs. So, yeah. But we actually, you asked me at an opportune time, because we took a record amount of takings only yesterday from February Frolics, which was a really generous group. Okay. And we were in within £11 of £400. So, but that was unusual, because sometimes we're trying to reach three figures. We don't necessarily, but it depends who's here. And
perhaps February people are more generous.
Perhaps yes. I don't know. Perhaps so. But I mean, no. I would say one of the attractions of the place is certainly its setting, the wonderful countryside around, and all sorts of things to do here. So, if people are interested in coming for their music or their singing or their dancing and that, they've got plenty right on the doorstep. They've got plenty of other things that they can do, whatever they want. But it, we do seem to attract very enthusiastic people as well, don't we? And I mean, from time to time, sort of one group will get a bit weaker and another group will get a bit stronger. I mean, singing has really taken off now, whereas it didn't necessarily before. But so if you've got an inspirational leader, this is what happens, isn't it?
Yes, exactly.
But with the dancing visits and the groups, we've had so many different musicians, because the folk musicians like to come and play for dancing here. It's quite an attractive place to be asked to come to.
Do you have a favourite band who've been here?
Oh dear. Well, I'm going. My sort of heyday of dancing has peaked long since. I mean, John and Mary Brock, the Western Country Arts Band. I just love their playing, and the two of them would often come just for our Wednesday evening dance group. And you know, they're such skilled people that's really lovely. I mean, there are none that I don't like. Some have been more practiced than others, but usually by the time they get here, they're fairly well practiced. But having said that, of course, a weekly or a fortnightly group dance meeting is the place for people to be trying to learn to call, if they fancy, you know, calling a dance, and that's good practice. And similarly, if a group of musicians are coming together, so long as they've got somebody to keep the tempo and to keep it going, it's the opportunity for other people to join in if the band is willing, and I hope they're not too sort of precious about that. But it's another thing of growing, isn't it? Of growing new bands and growing new callers. And growing new dancers, of course. I mean, the other thing is that I have sort of heard from outside over the years, oh, no, we wouldn't be good enough to come to Halsey. You've got to be special to come to Halsey. And they've always said, no, for goodness sake, you know, come with me, come with us or whatever, you know. We always say beginners as well. But sometimes people have been more accommodating than others. But if you want a club to succeed or a group to succeed, an activity to succeed, you've just got to offer friendship and, yes. And instruction to people. It's no good trying to be elitist or whatever. Yeah. I mean, that is destructive. Mm. But, encouraging people to enjoy what one has always enjoyed is great. So I'm glad that we still have the family week here as well, so that people mm-hmm. come, even with tiny
children.
Not that there's anything to say that... No, I wasn't quite that sure. It's not for children not to come. That was years and years and years ago. That should long since have disappeared. but sometimes I wonder, hopefully I can drive for a lot longer. But once one no longer drives or has a lift, it's quite difficult.
Yes.
And after all, we haven't got that many people right on our doorstep. Well, we've literally got no one on our doorstep. Mm. Mm. You are reliant on... And that's something that would need to be looked at, won't it? As the activities centre is developed, and I suppose quite a few groups would come, perhaps by minibus or something like that. Mm. Anyway, I'm not going on to folk traditions, am I? Telling tales. I mean, it's just been the place to dance.
Yes.
And, yes. I mean, some of my experience on Wednesday evenings, when the group is being successful and has got a nice lot... When the manor is being successful and has got a nice lot of residents coming in, then we can't always have the Wednesday dance group there. And we go out to Bicknoller Village Hall or Croken Village Hall. We used to go as far as Coonflory Village Hall as an alternative. And the manor of latter years has been very accommodating with that, because they've paid our rent of being somewhere else quite often, which is probably
spreading the word as well.
Yes. But there's nothing like, personally bringing someone along.
Mm.
Actually, they know that you really mean it then, rather than just come. Because we're lucky down here that we've got a nice lot of musicians, but you can always spread it to more people as well. And there are, I mean, Hestercombe House now, which is an old house... Mm. That is being developed as a music centre, which is quite a thing. They're taking on one of the London, I think it's one of the London examining boards, and they've got some sort of fairly high level tutors there. Mm-hmm. But I'm not advertising that, because I would be advertising the Somerset Rural Music School, which has been going for a long time. But that's not about this either. I've got my finger in too many pies.
Yes. Well, I think summing up.
Yes.
Your involvement has been a lifetime passion, hasn't it?
Yes, most certainly, yeah. Yes, I'd like to just twist the clock back a bit. I hope that with some treatment I can get back to dancing, because that I really do enjoy, and it has been something that has been very important, socially and physically and mentally. And because that's the other thing with folk dance, it's a really good exercise overall. Mm. The elements of it, the physical bit, obviously, and the mental bit.
Mm.
As well, because you've got to be able to, count out or know and be aware of space and numbers and things. And so therefore, sort of mood-wise and spirit, it's very lifting.
Mm.
And to have been to a really good dance was always really nice. Yes.
Well, Shirley, we'd better bring that to a halt. That's a really nice end point.
Yes.
Physically uplifting. Thank you so much.
That's all right. It's a pleasure.